Better than those living entities who can perceive sound are those who can distinguish between one form and another. Better than them are those who have developed upper and lower sets of teeth, and better still are those who have many legs. Better than them are the quadrupeds, that means four legs, quadrupeds. And better still are the human beings. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. It is said that certain birds, such as crows, can distinguish one form from another. Living entities that have many legs, like the wasp, are better than plants and grasses, which have no legs. Four-legged animals are better than many-legged living entities, and better than the animals is the human being who has only two legs. Okay, interesting verse. Rupa beda vinastatra tatascho bayato dataha tesham bahupata shrestas chatushpadas tato dvipat. So om gana timiranda shaganjana shlakaya chakshur meditam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. So it's described that the living entities, sarvagataha, the living entities are everywhere in this material creation. There is not one corner or one part of the material creation that doesn't have or isn't full of living entities. And of course, that even refers to the atom and even refers to what we call the so-called outer space that's supposed to be a vacuum. Now, because the Lord Krishna is very efficient in His use of His material energy. So it's not that there's anything wasted or any space wasted in this world. And living entities are distinguished according to this part of the Bhagavatam and Lord Kapila's instructions by their consciousness. And the consciousness can be analyzed in terms of the three modes of material nature. We were speaking about this last night, how that you have three modes of material nature and you go 3 times 3, it's 9, 9 times 3, it's 27, etc., etc., it's 3. That's called a scientific notation, where you got 3 to something power. Then you get to 8,400,000, and that's species of life. And even within those different species of life, there's unlimited variety. Although, for us, to be able to tell the difference between one cockroach and another is very difficult, isn't it? It's not, generally, we don't distinguish. I don't have the ability. And sometimes, even in this Earth planet, when you have people of different races, they look at someone from a different race and they say, you all look the same. Just like, you know, sometimes the black people see the white people like that, and white people, isn't it? The white people see the black people like that. And I was just in Fiji, and the devotees were telling me when they first saw white people, you know, me, they thought we all looked the same. Couldn't tell the difference. So, it's very embarrassing. So, we do look different, and we do have different personalities. So the point is that there's unlimited varieties, and these varieties are manifest by the consciousness or by the desire of the living entity. And that desire or consciousness comes about karanam gunasangasya sarasa janma jonishu. What is it? By contact with the modes of material nature. The cause, karanam. Karanam means the cause, just like Krishna is what? Sarva, karana, karanam. He's the cause of all causes. So the cause of our particular type of desire and consciousness is guna sangha, that is association with certain modes. We were talking about this last night. Karanam guna sangasya sadasad janma joni shu. So the Bhagavad Gita tells us that according to that combination of modes of nature, then what? Nahi kaschit shanamati jatu tishtati karma krit karyate yavasa karma sarva prakriti jaya gunar. Anyone know that verse? No. No one knows that verse. Yes, you know. That means everyone is forced to act helplessly. At least one devotee knows the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the modes of material nature. No one can refrain from action, even for a moment. In other words, the modes of nature. Sometimes it's, there was one nice picture in the Back to Garden one time about how the three modes are like puppeteers, you know, marionetteers. You have puppets here in Croatia? That means you have these puppets that are controlled by strings. There's two types of puppets. Some puppets are controlled from below with a hand. You have that type here too. And then some puppets are controlled by strings from above. So sometimes the modes of nature are depicted as three different persons who are controlling the living entity, like by strings, not only controlling the external motion, but controlling your thoughts and your desires. You actually don't have any independence in this material world. Like, if you think that, oh, I want to go eat this or go see this movie, it is not you that wants to go see a movie or you that wants to go eat this. It is the modes of nature that are controlling you. You understand? So at every moment, people are being controlled. So then the question is, and we were talking about this the other night, not here, but we were talking about this in relationship to free will and versus predestination. You know this controversy? Everybody knows what I'm talking about? Free will means you have the ability to choose, you know. I'm going to the movies tonight. I'm going to go to Mangalarti. I'm not going to go to Mangalarti. I'm going to go to the bar. Or I'm going to drink vodka instead of, what else do they have at the bar? I don't remember. Instead of wine, you know, whatever. You know, that's free will. You know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And predestination means that it's preordained that you're going to drink vodka instead of wine that night. You know, you have to do it. You're like a robot that's just going through the different motions. You know, all right, Mangalarti, vodka, not right after each other, but should leave some time in between Mangalarti and vodka. So anyways, that's really what a rough explanation of the difference between predestination and free will. So this verse in Bhagavad Gita seems to indicate that there's predestination. Everyone's forced to act according to these modes. So therefore, don't blame me if I'm in Maya. Isn't it? Or in the Christian world, if someone does some sinful thing, they say, the devil made me do it. You ever hear that saying? It's a common thing. You know, of course, we don't say the devil. We say Maya made me do it. Don't blame me. It's Maya. So anyway, so this is a convenient way of not taking any responsibility for our actions. Because according to Krishna, we can just quote, you know, I'm just forced to act helplessly according to the impulses born of material nature. And I'm not really responsible if I do some nonsense, break the sinful, regulated principles and sinful. It's just the modes of nature, Prabhu, not me. And Krishna says it in Gita. So you have a perfect defense, right? Against being in Maya. Just modes. And Krishna says in Gita, you can use the Gita to justify anything. Krishna says in the Gita that the self-realized soul sees while eating and sleeping and lying down that he does nothing. You know what I'm saying? The soul does nothing. So, according to Krishna, I'm not taking intoxication, it's just my body. You know, there's all sorts of ways to justify any damn thing using verses from the Bhagavad Gita if you're sly, intelligent. I don't want to say really intelligent, but if you're tricky enough, you know, if you have bad intelligence. So what is that? I mean, well, how can we say that everyone's forced to act helplessly? And then, you know, then my becoming Krishna conscious is just like, it's up to Krishna, it's not up to me. You know, don't blame me. Krishna, just like one devotee asked me the other day, he said, should we pray to Krishna to take away our free will? You know, and just make us serve him, you know, like little robots. So, you know, the same question is there, you know, we're just robots, you know, and just, you know, we may be in ecstasy, but so we're ecstatic robots. So, you know, we're happy because somehow or other, you know, by the actions of fate, we happen to be, have walked into the Hare Krishna temple. So how is this? You know, how can Krishna say you're forced to act helplessly? And at the same time, there has to be free will. You know, we have to choose because we know that's part of our philosophy too. Well, the way we exercise our free will is by choosing our association. Because in this world, if you associate, you can choose your association with different modes. Like Prabhupada said, you know, you associate with a drunkard, you become a drunkard. You associate with someone who is in the stock market, and then you get into that. You associate with someone who's a musician, you get into that. Like I was mentioning last night, some of you weren't in the class, so I can mention it again. That we went over to some devotee's house, and he was playing this nice heavy metal music. And as he was playing the music, you know, he made me listen to it. He's a musician. So I was thinking, oh, just to be nice to him, I have to listen to his stupid music. So sometimes we have to do that, you know, just like Lord Chaitanya had to listen to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you know, explain the Vedanta for 7 days, and at the same time Lord Chaitanya was thinking, this is nonsense. But anyway, he had to listen. So he was playing this heavy metal music, and then somehow or other you get into the mood. You associate with it, and then you get into it like, and I was explaining, it was such a heavy metal music that I felt like, you know, pulling out guns and shooting them after listening to it. And normally I don't have any attraction to these things. But just by associate, so in other words, if we choose to associate with something, that's our free will. We can choose to associate, then we're forced to act. You understand? You choose to associate with the mode of ignorance, you make friends, they're in the mode of ignorance, and then you begin to act in ignorance. Like Prabhupada said, he called some of his disciples, he said, monkey disciples. This is there in Bhagavatam, 5th canto, I believe. But Prabhupada says he has some monkey disciples. And he's not referring to Hanuman or Sugriva or any of these nice monkeys. I guess he's referring to like Dvidvita. You know the story? Dvidvita gorilla? The one who attacked Balaram and got smashed on the head and killed. So he said, the monkey disciples, and what monkeys disciples do, do you ever hear the saying, monkey see, monkey do? No, you have that. Or also there's sometimes pictures of monkeys like, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. You've never heard that? Anyway, it's a funny thing. So what monkeys do is they look into each other's eyes and encourage each other in sense gratification. The monkeys, sometimes they scratch under their arms like this, and the other one looks at them and they start scratching under their arms. Do you have a zoo here? It must be a zoo. Do you have monkeys in the zoo? Yeah, you can go and see sometime. Sometimes when I'm in a place where there's a zoo, I go for japa walks in the zoo, so just to enliven me in Krishna consciousness. To see all the species of life and, you know, understand, you know, how fortunate I am to be a human being according to this. Anyway, and how similar the activities are that the monkeys and the birds and the bees do. You know, just like we may fall in love, the monkeys fall in love too. So it's nothing special. So the monkeys, they look in each other's faces, Prabhupada said, and they encourage each other in sense gratification. They say, you know, it's very difficult to follow the regulated principles. Oh yeah, it's very difficult to follow the regulated principles. Oh yeah, you know, you have to relax, you know, waking up early is not practical. You know, I've been in the movement so many years. Yeah. You know, whatever. Just take this little marijuana, it'll help you chant better. We even had, you know, one whole group of devotees who was smoking marijuana one time. Anyway, won't mention that who was. And they thought they were chanting better, and they would sit sometimes and give class and just be in ecstasy. That's not ecstasy. Maya. Illusion. Ignorance. So, there's the monkeys. It's like that. They encourage each other. Monkey see, monkey do. So that's the mode of, that's the association. You know, when you choose to associate with a monkey, if you go in the cage to be with monkeys, after a while you're going to be swinging from the trees too. And if you go and associate with businessmen, you know, they're talking about money. You're going to be a businessman. You're going to want to make money. And if you go and associate with intellectuals, etc., and if you associate with devotees, then what? Sarusanga, sarusanga, sarvasasya koi, labhamatra sarusanga, sarvasiddhi hoy. Then you actually become Krishna conscious very quickly. So that's how free will is exercised. You associate, you choose your association, and then based on that, you're forced to act. Like if you associate with pure devotees, you're forced to act out of love. That is also, bhakti is a force. It is love, but love is also a force. Just like the perverted reflection of this in this world, which is lust, is definitely a force. You know, anyone who's been in love and been in lust in this world knows, you know, it's really a heavy force. You know, you're just like walking around in a daze all day long. And then you, anyway, I'm not going to get into description because this is 20 years later than when I was a fanatic sannyasi. But, so I'm not going to get into that description. But the point is that, you know, that it's a force. So bhakti is also a force. And it takes you over. Just like lust takes you over. Just like anger takes you over. Or greed takes you over. So bhakti, it just takes you over. And just like we were giving that seminar this last summer in Madhuri Kanambade about the bhavas, you know, different bhavas, vibhava, sanchari bhava, etc. And I'm not going to get into the details about it. But the bhavas increase to such a point that the ecstasies become involuntary. Involuntary means you don't have any control over them. So it's like that. So everyone is forced to act helplessly. Even, of course, a devotee, not under the modes of nature, but out of his love. He's impelled by love. And being impelled by love in the transcendental realm, then one sometimes acts even a little crazy. That's called divyanmada. It means transcendental madness. So that's what we are trying to achieve. Anyway, so that's the difference between free will and predestination. Now, another point that we made the other night is that Krishna, there is a type of predestination in that Krishna knows which way you're going to choose. Because Krishna does say in the Bhagavad Gita, I know everything past, present, and future, but me no one knows. So Krishna knows, even though you're choosing freely, Krishna knows which way you're going to choose to you're going to freely choose. But that doesn't negate your free will. It appears, you know, think about it, it appears to negate the free will, but you're choosing, but just Krishna knows which way you're going to choose in the future. So these are some of the points that can be raised from this class. Let's see, what else can we speak about? It's only 19 minutes into class. Usually I give about 30, 35 minute class. And of course, another point is that the human being who has only two legs is considered better simply because he has the ability to engage in self-realization. Although, under certain circumstances, animals can engage in self-realization if they have the mercy of the human beings. That is, ordinary animals, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had a dog, two dogs. One when he was very young. Maybe some of you know this story. One when he was very young, he brought a little puppy home, and his mother got upset because generally Brahmins don't keep dogs in the house. His mother got very upset, and she wanted him to get rid of it. He didn't want to get rid of it. She told him she would take care of it and send him out somewhere, and she got rid of it. And eventually that dog came back and went back to home, back to Godhead. And then there's the other story of the dog and Shivananda Sain. So under certain circumstances, you know that story where Shivananda Sain's dog eventually went to Jagannath Puri and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was throwing coconut pulp and the dog was chanting Hare Krishna, the dog went back to Godhead. So ordinarily animals can't engage in self-realization, but given the mercy of the devotees, they can certainly do that. And certainly given prasadam, they can make spiritual advancement. When I was a new devotee, Srila Prabhupada wrote to us that we were engaged in feeding ducks every Sunday with the old bread from the temple. And Prabhupada wrote to us that those ducks would become human beings in the next life. So we can benefit even the animals like that. But generally, we don't have animals that chant Hare Krishna. Of course, in the spiritual world, the animals are not lesser than those who have human forms. In the spiritual world, the animals have full consciousness And in the Vaikuntha planets, it's very interesting. This one little note about animals in the Vaikuntha planets. This is described in the Brihadbhagavatamrita, that in the Vaikuntha planets, everyone has the forearm form of Narayan or Lakshmi. So you would think, where can animals come from in the Vaikuntha planets? Because everyone, it looks like Narayan or Lakshmi. And the explanation given in the Brihadbhagavatamrita is that in the Vaikuntha planets, the living entities, even though they look like Narayan and Lakshmi, can sometimes take other forms, just for pastime's sake. In other words, someone with four arms looks like Narayan, except for the Kostubamani and the Srivatsa. They will actually appear as a bird or appear as a monkey to help the Lord in his pastimes, even though their original form. In other words, they can transform their Vaikuntha forms, which is quite interesting. They can transform or morph from being or looking like Narayan to looking like a bird, or looking like Lakshmi to looking like a monkey. And this is, but it is not their eternal form, but they can transform it. So that's interesting information about the entities in the spiritual world who can transform forms at will. Very, very interesting. Of course, in the Krishna Loka planet, the living entities generally maintain their same forms, but there's so much variety there. In the Krishna Loka planet, people aren't walking around looking like Narayan or Lakshmi. They're generally two-armed forms and the animal forms, and they're all fully conscious. And in the Krishna Loka planet, you have many pets of the devotees too, just like we have pets in this world. In this world, it's a perverted reflection of the Krishna Loka planet. But just like it's described that Krishna, he has a variety of pets. Krishna has pet oxen, deer, a pet monkey. He has a pet dog, swan, peacock, and parrots. And these are all described in Rupa Goswami's Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika. That is a light to light the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And Radharani has a whole bunch of pets too. Radharani has also she has cows, calf, monkeys, little deer, jacori birds, swans, and she even has an elephant pet. I don't know how she takes care of the elephant, but and of course the parrots again. The parrots who are always talking and carrying out her orders, or carrying out the messages. And of course Vrindadevi is the one in charge of all these parrots that go from one place to another. And they meet every morning in this Vrindakund. As any of you have been to Vrindavan, know that there's many parrots who meet there, and then they go out and carry the messages for Radha and Krishna throughout the day. So there are different animals in the spiritual world, but these animals do not have diminished consciousness because of contact with the modes of nature. They have pure Krishna consciousness. These are some of the points. It's hard to give a long class on this particular verse and purport. So any questions or comments? Yes. Who has two legs? Chicken. I guess so, yeah. I haven't eaten one in a long time, so I haven't checked, so... Yeah, I know. They have two legs and two wings. Yeah. Yeah, they're little birds. Big bird. Okay. So according to this verse, it says one thing. Another verse, it says the birds are a different category. So, birds are very intelligent sometimes. They can talk. They'll repeat the words. They can chant Hare Krishna. Of course, not with much realization. There's pigeons who can go many, many hundreds of kilometers like a homing bird, like that. In any case, the main thing is the human being is the one who's meant for self-realization. Monkeys are pretty intelligent, too. I guess dolphins would be considered a different category, right? Fish? Dolphins? No. You don't know. I haven't studied the explanation of dolphins in the Bhagavatam yet. But they say dolphins are intelligent, yeah. Higher? That's an interesting question. Let me just read this. Because later on, Hmm. In the previous verses, it's describing the development of sense perception, different types of sense perception. Let's read the previous verse. It says, those who have developed sense perception, sense of taste, are better than those who have developed only the sense of touch. Better than them are those who have developed the sense of smell, and better still are those who have developed the sense of hearing. In the beginning of this one, it says, better than those living entities who can perceive sound are those who can distinguish between one form and another. So it seems to be reading from this, it has to do with like ability to discriminate in this world. It's more perceptive ability. Yeah, Prabhupada explains in the purport, certain birds such as crows can distinguish one form another. Living entities have many legs, like the wasp, are better than plants and grasses. Four-legged animals are better than many-legged entities, and better than the animals is the human being who has only two legs. I mean, if you read this whole context, it comes up like best in terms of approaching Krishna. Now, of course, I don't say that birds can approach Krishna better than grasses. But it seems to be some sort of abilities within this world. Facilities and abilities within this world. That's what it seems to be indicating. From my reading, that's what it indicates. You know, ability to manipulate matter, ability to function in this world, and ultimately the ability to take up self-realization. This, from reading the context here. Not necessarily they're more spiritually advanced, but the ability, just ability to function. Yeah. Daddy Bhakti, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm aware of that. Yeah. I read the paper. What is my opinion about that? Well, first of all, during Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, there wasn't like an organized society. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to organize our society utilizing Western management, basically. We were talking somewhat about this yesterday, the day before. Prabhupada said that India was like a lame man and America or the West is like a blind man. And so you put a lame man together with a blind man, you get a whole man. Or at least, you know, they can function with each other. So in the same way, Prabhupada wanted like Western management, practically corporate management in the Krishna consciousness movement. Now it's one thing if you're just dealing with a village. Like in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time, they didn't have they didn't have an international society for Krishna consciousness, or a structure where they're going out and taking over the whole world in terms of Krishna consciousness. It was much more like free-flowing, you know, a free-flowing society. And of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, and he was perfectly capable of making everybody Krishna conscious without a structure. I'm even, you know, he had, like we described, he had dogs chanting Hare Krishna. He didn't really need a structure. I mean, he was just like the ultimate charismatic personality. He just go and everybody just becomes a pure devotee. I don't think we can do that right now, that, you know, we just go somewhere and we just bless them. You become a pure devotee, you become a guru. You know, Lord Chaitanya, like that story in South India, that Brahmana Karma wanted to follow Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, go back home, just become a guru, whoever you meet, yari dekatari krishna upadesh, marge guru hoi tori desh. I think we need, and Prabhupada indicated, and not only Prabhupada, but Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur indicated we needed a structure with some management to it. And, like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur established that, and he wanted a governing body commission. That, the name Governing Body Commission came from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who took it from the name of the Indian Railway System, you know, Government Board. So in order to carry out the wishes of the acharyas, we need structure and rules and regulations. Otherwise, I don't see how practically we're going to spread this movement. I mean, because we're not dealing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates anymore. We're dealing with people who are born in the Western world who have a tendency to fight, neophytes. That means they like to fight. You understand? Neophyte. They like new fights. Neo means new, and fight means to fight. Yeah, I know what it actually means, but I'm making a play on words. So, if we didn't have this structure, it would just, you know, everybody running around spontaneously initiating people, we'd have people just like taking the money and running, which we've already had in our movement. People starting their own like deviant cults, you know, marijuana cults, which we've already had in our movement. Sahajas of all types. You know, I don't see how we'd have any unity at all. So there has to be some control. Not too much control is another thing. That's not good. And that destroys the natural spontaneity or the natural, let's say, enthusiasm. And as Prabhupada said, we should become independent thinkers and enthusiastic. So that will destroy our enthusiasm to carry out Krishna consciousness, and it'll break the spirit of the movement. You'll have the structure, but you won't have the spirit. So it's somewhere in between. You can't just go back to those days and do the same thing that we were doing, because you need checks and balances. I mean, we've seen in our movement the need sometimes for more checks and balances, especially, you know, with those who are taking a high spiritual position or those who have a managerial position. I mean, we have so many, what to speak of gurus, we have so many people who have been temple presidents who just, without any consideration or responsibility, build up big debts to the BBT, isn't it? Big debts to the BBT and just made a complete disaster of things. So unless we have some system of checks and balances on the leaders, and I'm not only speaking of gurus, I'm speaking about temple presidents, GBCs, just like, you know, myself, I have to submit a financial report who has given me donations over the year, submitted to the GBC. I have to write a letter to Prahlad Nandamaraj, who's the sannyas minister, what I did this year. You know, he writes me a letter. Please tell me what you did. And I have to say, on March 15th, I went there. March 16th, I did this. I ate, you know, two bowls of prasadam on March 17th. You know, not quite that bad. You know, we don't want to be micromanaged KGB style. But certainly, so I have to, even myself, I have to report to Prahlad Nandamaraj, I have to report to the GBC Executive Committee, I have to report to the whole GBC body, you know, what my zone was like, you know, I'm responsible for what happens here, if something happens here, then, you know, I get in trouble. Not in the past, you know. Just like I got, who was that? Oh, Jananda, he wrote me a letter from the BBT, and he said, Croatia has a big debt, and I said, that's the past. Not me. Anyway. So, I'm not going to take responsibility for what happened in the past, but, so I have to be responsible. There's a check and balance, you know. I'm called to task. And Prabhupada even said, if the GBC makes a mistake, they become a shudra in the next life. Did you know that? Shudra, yeah. Well, he was talking about Yamaraj. There's a story in the Bhagavatam how Yamaraj, he made a mistake with this Mandavya Muni. You know the mistake he made? Because Mandavya Muni hurt an insect. He pierced an insect when he was young, and later on he was punished. The king actually pierced him with a lance because there were some robbers or dacoits hiding within his ashram, and the king thought that this Mandavya Muni, or sometimes called Manduka Muni, was harboring the dacoits, or was one of the dacoits. And so he didn't die when this lance was put into him. And the king realized that he made a mistake by putting the lance into this Muni, but they couldn't get the lance out. So the rest of his life, the Muni had to walk around with the lance in him. And that's why he's called the Muni with the lance, Mandavya Muni. Anyway, So anyway, so he went to Yamaraj and he asked Yamaraj, why was this done to me? You know, why was I punished? And Yamaraj said, when you were young, you pierced a little insect with a little grass or straw. And he got angry at Yamaraj and he said, you know, therefore I curse you to become a Shudra, born in a Shudra family. And Prabhupada said in his purport, when he was telling that story, he said, Yamaraj is one of Krishna's GBC men. And so because of his mistake, he actually had to take birth as a Shudra. And Prabhupada said in the same way, if the GBC makes a mistake, they have to take birth as a Shudra. So I think perhaps, you know, my future is pretty much assured in that way. So, but there's no problem. In Kali Yuga, everyone's a Shudra, so, you know, that's not a problem. As long as we can take up Krishna consciousness, you know, what can we do? That's a sacrifice for Prabhupada. So the point is that we actually have so many responsibilities, report to so much. And also if we want to spread the movement, we have to be seen as respectable by the outside society. Just like you have these, right now you're getting organized here in Croatia, you know, you get recognized by the government and you have so many rules and regulations the government has given you. So you can say, let's be spontaneous, you know. But, you know, if you want to spread Krishna consciousness, you have to be respected by the outside society. Prabhupada wanted us to make the leaders of society Krishna conscious. And if we're just like a hippie group, how are we going to make the leaders of society Krishna? We're not following the rules and regulations. Not only we're not going to be able to make the society Krishna conscious, but, you know, the government will probably come and close us down too, isn't it? So we have to follow certain things just to be practical in this world. And so one of those things is the restrictions on who's a guru. Because we're not dealing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, we're dealing with the modern world, it's a different circumstance, and so everything has to be regulated. Now, it should not be too regulated. You know, the idea is that anybody who's actually qualified, and, you know, what does that mean in terms of qualification? But anyway, they should be allowed to present Krishna conscious movement and initiate. That's the idea. But there has to be some people who review to see if someone meets the minimum qualification. Otherwise, we won't have a movement anymore. And also, another point about gurus in the old days is the gurus weren't managing their disciples. That's a new age or new thing that we seem to have nowadays, that the guru also becomes the ultimate managing authority for the disciples. But that's not what Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada wanted the management structure of ISKCON to be the managing authority of ISKCON, not the gurus. The gurus should be there for inspiring and assisting in Prabhupada's society. The gurus are not meant to be independent. And see, one of the problems we have now in ISKCON is that, you know, some of the gurus, not all of them, try to function like independently, you know, either economically or managerially, from the management structure. And that causes sometimes difficulty for those who are managing, causes difficulties for spreading the movement, and confusion, of course, in the minds of many people. And it's not helpful. It's not helpful. The gurus should not be seen as someone who's managing the disciple's life, but someone who is inspiring the disciple in Krishna consciousness and working together with the other members of the Krishna consciousness movement to carry out the mission cooperatively. So that's why we need some, you know, control of the situation. For example, in one country, the country of Estonia, which I do some preaching in, that we had someone who just declared himself to be a guru. You know, he was a disciple of Gaur Govinda Maharaj, and he said, and he declared himself to be, he took sannyas, you know, from a picture or something like that. And he said, now I am so-and-so Swami, now I am a guru, and I'm a guru, because my guru gave me Krishna Prem, and I'm the only one my guru gave Krishna Prem to. You know, talking about Gaur Govinda Maharaj. And Prabhupada only gave Gaur Govinda Maharaj Krishna Prem. None of his other disciples have Krishna Prem. So we're actually the only bona fide Sampradaya within ISKCON. And guess what? A lot of people believe him. You know, there's so many people who can be cheated. It's very easy to cheat. And so he has a whole group of followers, and he pulled many devotees out of the temple, created a disaster there because of that independence and his craziness, too, what to speak of his mental problems. But that's another issue. So if we want to please Prabhupada, first of all, Prabhupada is everyone's guru in the sense, Siksha Guru, primary Siksha Guru. He may not be everyone's Diksha Guru. He's not everyone's Diksha Guru. But he's everyone's Siksha Guru. And that Siksha Guru in one sense is more important than Diksha Guru. He's everyone's source of inspiration, and he's the standard by which we can measure everybody else and everyone else's devotion. And ultimately, we're followers of Srila Prabhupada. And that's what's prominent. Prabhupada is the Samstapaka Acharya, the founder Acharya. And everyone else should be seen as his assistant, not as imitation Prabhupada's. You know, one of the problems that occurred after Prabhupada left the planet is that many people tried to be imitation Prabhupada's. You understand? You know, they just like, you know, they were 21 years old or 22 years old, and all of a sudden they become Mahacharyas. Instead of just being regular gurus. A regular guru is one who guides his disciples in Krishna consciousness, not a big acharya like Prabhupada on a big seat or anything like that. So we need regular gurus in our movement. Not this artificial imitation acharya guru thing. So anyway, does that answer your question? So we definitely need some restrictions. That's all. I mean, naturally, we'd all like to function without restrictions. I mean, I would love to function, don't have to give reports to this person, don't have to give reports to that. That would be great. But, you know, because I love Prabhupada, and I want Prabhupada's movement to be pushed forward, I understand what I have to do. I have to sacrifice some of my own individual, you know, liberties in order to please Prabhupada. I mean, that's natural. In this world, if you want to please someone, let's say if you're a family man, and you want to please your family, have nice children, you can't just be a free brahmachari anymore, right? I mean, you have to work, you have to take care of the babies, you know. The brahmacharis may not understand that. So why does he have to take care of it? Just put the baby down, let the baby cry, you know, just lock it in a closet or something like that. Lock the door, and when Mangal Arati is over, you know, open it and just throw a bottle in, you know. But, you know, anybody who's responsible knows that you have to change your life if you take up household life, right? It's not the same. So if you want to push forward Prabhupada's movement, you have to sacrifice some of your individual liberty. Just like, you know, I've come here to Croatia, and, you know, I'm happy here. I'm not saying there's any problem. But, you know, this is my sacrifice, because Prabhupada, through his devotee, Bhaktacharita Maharaj, and through the GBC, have asked me to come here. You know, if I had my choice, I'd probably be in Hawaii or something like that. Especially at this time of the year. You know, it's not that I'm thinking, oh, great, it's nice and cold outside. Jai, Haribo. You know, the summer is a different thing. So instead, we make sacrifice. Everybody has to make sacrifice if you want to push forward the movement. You know, we could be doing so many things, but we're sacrificing because we love Prabhupada. And so similarly, we would sacrifice our independence as gurus or independence as persons to a certain extent, not completely, so we can please our spiritual master. Is that all right? So any other questions or comments? Didn't succeed. Well, I said that free will is to choose your association. You will succeed if you're living with people who go to Mangal Arati. Because if you don't wake up, they will wake you up. I remember in the old days when I was a temple commander, and you're fortunate I'm not a temple commander anymore, I would wake all the devotees up in the ashram, and if someone refused to get up, I would take them in their sleeping bag and drag the sleeping bag into the shower and turn the shower on. Then they went to Mangal Arati. Of course, first I had to fight with them, but that was... In other words, I'm making the point, if you associate with people who go to Mangal Arati, you will go to Mangal Arati. That's all. That was the point of class. If you associate with people doing certain things or having certain modes of thought, or then you'll get into that same mode. Yes. So you have to continue your association by hearing the process. The hearing process is the most important association. Physical association is not that important, although it's very helpful. Like I said, you know, when I was a temple commander, I'd wake people up. But sound, association by sound vibration is actually more important. So if you associate with advanced devotees by hearing, and nowadays we're so fortunate that we have these things, you know, MP3 players and everything. You know what I'm talking about? Like here, you know, I'm using my MP3 player to record classes, an MP3 player. And it has 1 gigabyte of memory in it. And it can hold maybe, you know, 200-300 classes in it. So, not that I'm selling these things right now, you know. You know, I think, oh, how much do you want for it? But you can buy them, you can buy them here in Croatia. I'm sure they have iPods here, right? I'm sure if I walk in downtown Zagreb, there'll be people walking around with their iPods in their ears, right? Everywhere in the world, even in India, it's like that now. So you can associate. Krishna's given us this wonderful technology. If it's used properly, it's wonderful technology because you can associate from anywhere in the world. I mean, you know, I even use this program where I can talk to people and see people anywhere in the world. You know, we use technology. Just like this morning I called someone and I saw them and I said, what are you doing up at this time of the night? You should be sleeping, going to Mongolia. And then I have another place I look and I can see the inside of our temple room in different temples. And I can see who's at Mangalarti. Yeah, we don't have that here yet. Maybe eventually. I'd like to install my whole zone, like have webcams, you know. Network cameras in every temple room. So one time when someone was in the temple room and I saw that they weren't dressed properly and I called up on the phone and I said, what is this? I just saw you wearing improper clothes in the temple room. And they got nervous. And then they made a whole plan to disconnect the camera. They were becoming paranoid, you know. Because this is the type of camera we installed has the ability to move around like a little eye. It goes like that. And so the devotees are always looking back at the back of the temple. He's watching us. He's watching us, you know. And so technology can be used for good purposes like that. In some of our temples, they have like 3 or 4, like the Los Angeles, California temple, they have 3 or 4 cameras in that temple. And you can control, anyone can go on and they can see what's happening. So I mean, anyway, so the point is we use technology to associate. You get your MP3 player, it's not that expensive. And you listen. And you look at, technology also is the books. You know, we're associating the books. So you can have the best association. There's no problem. Even if you're not living in a temple, make your home a temple. You know, put some nice altar there. There's no problem with association. You can have it anywhere in the world. Is that right? So, one more question, yes. Krishna knows what's best. Krishna knows what's best. Then, the problem is that most of the time, internet is used for fighting, for improper things. Like you see the devotees, some devotees will go on and criticize other devotees by the internet. It would have caused more problems. That's right. Right, yeah, Prabhupada wasn't very impressed with the technology that much. I remember when Prabhupada walked into the BBT building in Los Angeles and I was there. And there was a telex machine. Yeah, that was what you're talking about. Not fax. Fax those days, there was no fax when Prabhupada was on the planet. So there was a telex machine. That means you type in one typewriter and it comes out the other end in a typewriter like 1,000 kilometers away or 10,000 kilometers away. And they were connecting between Los Angeles and New York. And they typed out, you know, all glories of Prabhupada in New York. They weren't there to type out. And eventually they came and they said, oh, Prabhupada's here. And they typed out, all glories to you, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada wasn't impressed. Prabhupada wasn't impressed with technology for technology's sake. And also, when Prabhupada saw the computer that we had that was meant for typesetting books in Los Angeles, Prabhupada looked at it and said, it's all useless unless you can produce 17 books in 2 months. That's a famous story. And Prabhupada said, all this is useless unless you can produce it. So, in other words, if it can be used for Krishna, that's very wonderful. But otherwise, it can actually deviate one from Krishna consciousness. One just gets attached to technology for technology's sake. But, you know, this sort of thing, like Prabhupada liked tape recorder. Prabhupada was one of the first people to get a tape recorder. You know, in New York, one of the first things he did was he bought a tape recorder. It was an old one, not the cassette ones that we don't see anymore. Or I haven't seen a cassette player for a long time. It was the old, what we call reel-to-reel tape recorders. I don't know if any of you have ever seen one of those. And it's a big reel of tape about this big on one side and another reel to take it up. And it goes from one side to another like that. And Prabhupada bought that. It's one of the first things Prabhupada bought. Prabhupada bought a typewriter. That's technology. Of course, it wasn't electric and it wasn't a computer, but that's what was available in those days. And that's why we have many of Prabhupada's early lectures, because some of Prabhupada's early lectures, he himself recorded the lectures. Did you know that? Prabhupada would record some of his own lectures in the beginning, or his own bhajans in the beginning. So you see Prabhupada using something that was, at that time, tape recorders were what we call on the cutting edge. In other words, they were advanced. Even that sort of tape recorder. So, you know, I'm sure Prabhupada saw an MP3 player and understood all the devotees could walk around with his classes and tapes. Prabhupada would love that. But the internet is misused mostly nowadays. And it's definitely misused. I mean, so many discussions. You can spend your whole life entrapped in the virtual world of the internet, isn't it? Just like on our PAM host system, you have all these different conferences. You know, you have astrology conference, Mataji conference, Pitaji conference. You know, I'm just making up some names, but anyway. You know, and then we have the European GBC, or European RGB, Gesundheit conference, you know, whatever it is, Zunkuf. We're about Germany. There's a conference about France. I could mention all the ones I'm members of. How many of you members are? Yeah. 95 conferences. Yeah. Read and just erase after that, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and people add me to conferences sometimes, and I say, please don't add me to your conference. I got enough problems as it is. So, you know, sometimes it becomes overwhelming, the internet. So one has to be careful of not being overwhelmed by this technology. You understand? But, you know, it's wonderful. I mean, if we can associate, if I can hear these devotees, the chanting of these wonderful devotees, then anywhere in the world, isn't one? If I can be in an airplane and you know, plug in my headphones, or, you know, I'm using technology for so many things. Just like right now, I'm learning Hindi. And so I plug in my headphones and I'm just learning how to speak Hindi through this language course. So that's Krishna's service too. So anything, that's Yukta Vairagya. Not just Yukta, but Vairagya. So, don't worry. So it helps us associate. I mean, if by a little device like this, I can associate with so many great Vaishnavas, what is wrong with it? Why should I just like sit, you know, in a gumsha all day long? Isn't it? I mean, you're using so much technology. You have a computer. You brought your computer into the temple room, right? That's nice. That's very easy. Once you get a telephone connection here in the next 10,000 years. You know, then. And that's what I mentioned. I said Los Angeles has many cameras. So once you get a that's a DSL. You're going to get a DSL line as a regular telephone line very easily, like we have where I'm staying, Rapuha's place. And then you can put a webcam back there in the back of the temple. It's a simple thing, not expensive. Not expensive at all. And you can have an audio stream coming from, you know, your amplifier over there, going on so everybody here in the city can listen to what's happening in class. And that's what we do. Many of our temples have that now. In communities. For example, one of the communities that I'm in charge of in North Carolina, we have people, they live close to the temple, but, you know, many of them can't come to the temple because they have jobs, they have children to take care of, and they tune in their computers in the morning, they're listening to the class. It's very nice. So, you know, eventually you do something like that. It brings the devotees in together. And eventually we can have radio stations on the internet. People all around the world can listen. You know, once you put on the internet, if there's Croatian devotees in India, they can listen to the class here. It's like a virtual community. So, anyway, what am I doing? I'm talking about technology. You got me talking about, instead of glorifying Krishna, you know, we're becoming the information technology manager of ISKCON here. But the point, I don't know why you started me on this, but the point is that we can use these things in Krishna's service to associate with each other. And I use them all the time. So, yeah, one more question, that's it. No. Not at all. Not at all. It's just the same number of devotees, plus the people at home who couldn't come. There's a lot of people who can't come. I mean, people have responsibility. If someone has never had children, they don't know what it means to have children, you know, obviously. They don't know what it means to have to take care of a child and do all the things and get ready for work in the morning. And they can't come to the temple. I mean, I just don't see how, it's just not practical. And we shouldn't criticize people when they are not able to come to the temple. I haven't seen it diminish at all. There's one funny story though, that in our Los Angeles temple, they used to have cable TV that was connected to the camera in the temple. You know, cable TV? I'm not talking about computer cable. They turn on their regular television with a remote control. So one time I was calling up one of my friends in Los Angeles. I was in time zone about 3 hours different. So I was later. He was at 4:30 in the morning. And I called him up and I said, how are you? And he said, just wait a second. I have to offer obeisance to the deities. He was in bed. So, you understand? He was in bed and watching Mangalarti. he said, it's all the time for Mangalarti. Jai, jai, we need to work at Ishki Jai. Hey, ball. And he said, okay, what do you want? You know. So and he had his television remote control. And he was looking at the deities and said, Mangalarti in bed. This we don't want. You know, but that's a little too crazy. Mangalarti in bed, right? But anyway, there's misuse and proper use of technology. But I don't find that people attend the temple less. No. I think they become more inspired to be at the temple when they're able to hear the class, because it's actually better to be there. Because there's a lot of communication. Most of communication is nonverbal, where you can see what's happening, where you can be in the atmosphere of the temple, where you can see the deeds. I mean, it's one thing to see a picture of the deeds. It's another thing to be here offering obeisances to the deities. We just like in many of our temples, the daily darshan is put on the webpage. That is how the deities look every day. And then we have thousands of people who are looking at the deities every day in different temples. You know, how the deities dressed. For example, on my webpage, I have a daily darshan of the deities. And we have a map of the whole world that has little dots in it. And depending on the size of the dot, that means how many people signed in to look at the deities. And, you know, it's amazing. I just like looking at the map of the world. And they're in Australia. There's big dots. And even in Africa. I've never been in Africa my whole life. You know, Africa, South America, you know, everywhere in Europe, everywhere, all these dots are all over the place. And it's inspiring to see all these people taking association like this. And then also another thing I do is I put all my classes on the internet. And then, you know, these people, devotees from all over the world are downloading the classes. Like that. So It's so much nice association. If I want to hear someone else's classes, then I go to the internet and I can just find practically anyone else's classes. I can keep all of Prabhupada's classes. I can keep in two DVDs. It's nice to have that facility, especially for a traveling preacher. You know, I could travel and have a whole Vedic library with me. So, I think it increases our sadhana. I mean, I find that to be true. So I think it's time for virtual prasadam. You can just look on the internet at, you know, some samosas and feel good about it. So, all right, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.